Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackwitz. A special Tuesday edition where we break down all the huge deals that happened in the NHL trade deadline. It was a flurry, an earthquake of game-changing. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
So if you had to put an actual number to it, how many minutes of trade deadline coverage did you actually watch?
Well, see, Bob, here's the thing, is that yesterday was the Taste Ontario Toronto at the ROM. It was Experience Great VQA Wines of Ontario. So I went from morning show to dealing with my banker to going to this to aggressively napping to waking up and then digesting everything I missed. So
what are you going to say about none?
Yeah, zero.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. So I didn't think that when I was going to say 4 minutes, which is about as much as I watched, that I would come in as the clear leader.
Now, Bob, have you tried the Meldville Wines, their Pinot? It was really juicy mid-palate, much more than I expected.
I haven't, although you describe it in a way that makes me feel like I've missed out.
Yep. Kloss and Chase was there. Their Pinot, again, great, and had their Chardonnay. So this is my NHL trade deadline report, was going through, because it's CanCon, going through some of my favorite Ontario wineries.
So would Jackson Triggs be like Glendenning then? Luke Glendenning is Jackson Triggs in your world?
Bob, did I ever tell you when I got in trouble the one time for insulting Wayne Gretzky's winery at TSN Radio?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Were you pulled up on the carpet?
Yeah, but everyone was very good about it. They said, don't worry, Matt, this too shall pass. So Dan O'Toole, I was interviewing him, and when he came back to Canada, him and Jay Andre,
on 1050, just so I'm clear about this. Okay.
Dan asked me for a list of wines to buy, like things that are 25 and under, 20 and under, 15 and under. I'm like, great, let me shoot you a list. So he's doing an interview with me, and he goes, hey, Cos, he brought it up. I didn't bring it up. He's like, guess how many of those wines I was able to find at the LCBO? I'm like, how many? He's like, none. All we have in where he lives, in some small town, is Coors Light and Wayne Gretzky wine. Then I just say offhand, I'm like, oh, Gretzky, him and Mike Weir, that wine is trash. Those guys need to stick to sports. A couple minutes later, the interview ended and we went to break. Wayne Gretzky Winery was one of the sponsors.
Oh, no.
To make it worse.
Oh, no.
Wayne Gretzky's brother was driving in the car listening.
Oh, no.
It could have been even worse. Wayne was in the car, but he got out. He was dropped off at the airport right before I made that comment. And then, you know, but his brother heard, apparently not happy, and rightfully so. You know, here's, you know, this jackass, you know, just calling out the wines. So, you know, I was told afterwards, listen, you know, your opinion carries something a little different with wine. And to be fair, I hadn't tried Gretzky wines in ages. So, I felt kind of bad about
that.
Wow.
So this wasn't so much that it was a Gretzky thing. It wasn't about the great one having his nose out of joint. It was a sponsorship thing. And I got to tell you, Matt, I actually owned a radio station once, and that is the third rail.
Yeah.
You touched the third rail with your tongue.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's
that,
nothing.
That's no good.
You do not insult the sponsor. So getting back to your question about Jackson Triggs, here's my review. They were there.
Is that like saying, the Sacramento Kings are on the draft floor?
Yeah. Hey, look, there's Sacramento. Look at them bouncing a basketball and such. So 13th Street Winery, the sparkling. Excellent. So where do I get started with the trade deadline stuff?
Well,
because there is a lot to get to.
There is a lot to get to. We should probably just start with the Leafs.
Yeah.
It feels like the logical place to start.
Yeah.
We being a Toronto-based show and all.
Yep.
I liked it. It was unspectacular, but they made the Brian Boyle-esque move. You shore up your fourth line. And also, you kind of win by not adding the wrong player, Luke Glendenning, because you know that Babcock would, whoever he brings in, and it's Plekanec in this case, he's going to use him too much.
Yeah.
But at least you want a better player that he's going to use too much.
Yeah. The great thing about Plekanec, and we'll start there.
By the way, Plekanec.
Oh, I'm going to say it.
You know
so
what
many
I mean?
Different ways.
Like, he's one of those athletes that has the weird distinction of having his name pronounced in about 30 different ways.
Yeah.
And they're all right.
Yeah. Well, Sutter, Daryl Sutter, who was on the TSN panel, he mangled the name. So I feel good if a two-time Stanley Cup champ is screwing up the name.
Can we just agree on a pronunciation, a McEwen Cause pronunciation guide?
No, no.
Do you call him Plekanec, Plekanec, or Plekanec?
It's 11:33 as we tape this. Ask me at 11:40 how I record. Like, I'd like to say we do it one way, but that's not going to work.
It's just like the mood ring of pronunciations. It'll just go where
just
it goes.
Spin the wheel, Bob. Spin the wheel. Anyway, Tommy P, the best thing I can say about him is he's overqualified for the role. And that's great. That's what you want. You want to have guys that are overqualified at a variety of positions because it means you got a damn good team. It's a great signing. He wasn't great last night against Tampa, but it allows for a very good fourth line and a very defensively minded fourth line, and you can protect JVR and Bozak from tough, even strength minutes late in playoff games.
Ding, ding. That's the most important thing is, I always think, and I've used this analogy on the pod before, but I always think of your lines kind of like a hotel blanket that isn't long enough or wide enough. So you can either cover your feet.
Yep.
And then your shoulders are cold, or you can cover your shoulders and your feet are cold. So what this does is it actually extends the blanket a little bit, gives you more coverage. And you don't have to expose JVR and Bozak, like you say, in that third period, in those close games, it gives Mike Babcock more ability to make sure the other team doesn't score.
Yeah.
And in the playoffs, that's everything, because there's just so many close games, so many games going down to the wire. You can't rely on their power play to bail you out because they don't call penalties the same way. You need to be good 5-on-5.
It was all one-goal games against Washington. So, yeah, you're going to need that.
So we all like it. Now, there was a sexier, more dramatic version that would make us all feel like they were going for it this year.
Yeah.
But to tell you the truth, even if JVR did get dealt, and I was a proponent of him getting dealt.
So was I.
I would prefer it to be for stuff they could flip in the offseason when, you know, teams have a better sense of their cap situation. And it's more likely that a huge deal is going to happen at the draft or at free agency than it is at trade deadline.
Keep this in mind. And I get the idea of, listen, it makes sense. I understand they keep all these, like keep JVR because he represents a better chance for the team to win. Even though his third period, even strength minutes are going down and down and down. But I get it. He scored last night. He's got like 26 goals. Just know this. He will walk and you'll not get anything for him. And for better or for worse. And if they go on a deep run, it'll feel really worth it, and the young guys will get more experience. So
He is a good forward.
Yes.
He is not one of the team's best forwards.
Nope.
And I think that we look to Pittsburgh for guidance in this because they've managed to do a great job of managing their cap. One, they got their superstar for a pretty nice price. So,
yeah.
So there's that. But they don't fall in love with guys. Like they've signed their stars. They've signed them for a long time at reasonable cap hits. And then guys just come and go.
Yeah.
You know, like Jake Guentzel. Okay. Where was Jake Guentzel a couple of years ago? Well, he was not in the league. But you see my point, right? Like they're just constantly.
Chris Kunitz. He's, you know, James Neal. Gone.
Right. And you just replace them and you cycle through new names. And I think that's the model that the Leafs are going to have to employ. Like JVR, would you like to keep him? Sure.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Of course you would. Can you afford him?
No.
No.
Unless he decides he really wants to take a discount, then no, you can't afford him.
And why would he?
Yeah. Why? Exactly. Like he's put himself in that position for that one last contract, that 6-year, $6.5 million deal. And mazel tov, go off, get that money.
And we've talked about this on the pod. I don't think that's going to be a disastrous deal. I think the way he plays, he doesn't absorb a lot of wear and tear.
Yep.
He takes very good care of himself. He's not super old. You know, you'll probably get 3 or 4 really productive years out of him. And he can score with anybody.
Yes.
Like we've seen that with the Leafs. No matter who you stick him with, he's going to score.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
He's going to help your power play. So, you know, like you say, mazel tov. Go and have a great career. Hope to see you in the finals one day.
Yep. The negative is for people who thought that the Leafs had a real legit chance at winning the Cup. They still do. But this was a blow for you because Tampa, the best team in the East, thus, the best team in the NHL got better. And not only did they get better by getting Ryan McDonagh, which fits such a need for this team, and it's Victor Hedman and Strahlman. It's Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi. It's super young but talented Mikhail Sergachev on the third line. Look at me again, that last name, right.
But you nailed it, by the way. I'm kind of shocked. By the way, can we refer to him as super talented young and former Montreal Canadian?
Yes.
Mikhail Sergachev. No. I just would feel better about that.
Any Toronto fan would. But they didn't get rid of anyone. I know they got rid of the one fellow who's 25 years old who's got 20 goals.
They did not make themselves
Nemestnikov. Oh, but Braden.
You know, honestly, you've been doing so good so far.
Braden Point, thank you. Braden Point, still there, 54 points, 21 years old. Sergachev, still there. Taylor Radish, Cal Foote, young guys, they didn't get rid of. You know, so for Tampa, they bring in, you know, they bring in Ryan McDonagh and they don't lose anyone of immediate value. Damn, Steve Yzerman, you're a wizard.
He is really good. And of course, he's really good in part because they've done a great job of acquiring and developing talent,
yes,
which gives them the confidence make these kinds of moves. Because there's like, you know, Cal Foote and whoever else is coming up through the organization. Like, they're going to have new resources to work with.
Mm-hmm. And so, and you're right. It needs to be said. It's the scouts. It's everyone, the drafting. It's everyone else on Tampa's organization that put all those assets there. And then Yzerman was able to pounce.
You know, you have the confidence to make those kinds of deals. Because it's like shark's teeth. As soon as they fall out, a new row is coming out in about 24 hours. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning are the shark's teeth of developmental rosters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the Leafs will find themselves in that position within a year or two. Mm-hmm. We're not super strong at the center position, as we've seen, because we've had to go outside to try and bolster. But I think the defense, we're going to start getting some people from Travis McDermott and then Liljegren. And there's going to be some answers provided internally.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of good scoring wingers. They've done a really great job of building up, our developmental system under Dave Nonis. Jeez, like Freddie Gauthier.
Yeah, I know.
Who did that? It's almost amazing. It's almost fun to go back and look at that roster from about 4 or 5 years ago. Who the hell? We were excited about Stuart Percy. Remember when Stuart Percy was going to suitable fill-in for Jake Gardner one day?
If you want to just either get depressed or remind yourself how good things are, like you go back and look at a couple years ago, the draft, Marner, and then, or I think it was Nylander and Dermott, or it might have been the Marner year, it was Marner and Dermott. But then you go back 3 years before that, and it's just a wasteland of Tyler Biggs.
He might be the most egregious of them all, because they were so excited about him, first round pick. But anyway, and Stuart Percy was as well in that same draft. It reminds me a little bit of when you go over those old rosters. You know, when you sit down with your grandparents and they show you pictures from the old country and they tell you stories like, you know, we used to eat grass because there was nothing to eat. Like, I've heard that from my in-laws.
You know?
We ate grass.
Mm-hmm.
This would be the hockey equivalent of that.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, we were eating grass stealing pies off of windowsills to keep going.
And Kadri and Komarov were on the first line. A different time. Overall, I think we're in agreement here, is that they didn't get rid of any young part. They were, you know what they weren't? They weren't impatient. And the thing is, the Leafs didn't need to be. They were in a great position where if a deal made sense, fantastic. If it doesn't, you don't need to chase rentals.
This is a bit of a wishy-washy position. I recognize that. But my thought on the Leafs in the playoffs are, could they go all the way? Sure. They've got a really talented set of forwards up front. And if Craig Anderson gets, or Freddie Anderson gets really hot. Sorry,
and what
Craig,
if Zaitsev gets healthy? What if Zaitsev, because a broken foot, you know, I know he wasn't playing great before, but what if Zaitsev, you know, gets fully healthy and becomes close to the guy he was last year?
Curious. Well, we'll get to the Roman Polak question in just one moment. But
I think we know the answer. But
the point is, could they make a run? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure they could. But I think next year is their year. And I think whatever they do this year and in this upcoming offseason is setting up this team to be genuine contenders at the start of 2018-2019.
Yes.
So it's found money at this point.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, they're kind of teams like that. Like New Jersey's one of those teams right now. Maybe a little bit further behind. But, you know, they make the deal for Patrick Maroon, and they've got Taylor Hall now, and they're a lot better than people thought they would be. But, you know, like, it's not your time.
Yeah.
It's coming.
It's coming.
But it's not your time.
Yes.
So, Roman Polak, can we get into this for just one moment?
So, Polak...
Is he going to play in the playoffs, man?
I hope not. And the specific moment, the goal that made it 3-2 by some guy named Adam Aaron, I don't even know who the hell it is. There was some guy from Tampa that scored his second goal of his
career. You're talking
career.
About the blown pass.
Yeah, Adam Ernie. Yes, and it was... I know Nylander...
The suicide pass, just throwing it out to nobody?
Yeah.
And then Nylander kind of got tagged with that.
Nylander got a little bit tagged on it. Nylander was responsible for the Kunitz goal, but... Yeah, Roman Polak, horrible, horrible play. Listen, there's two guys that now have signature, you know, or a couple guys that have the signature mistake. The Komarov one is that's a wide open net. How did you not score? And the Polak, it seems every game there's a couple of these. And he's not getting the same sort of ice time as Jake Gardner. Like Gardner, I'm okay with the mistakes because he's got the puck more on a stick. But yeah, the Polak one that made it 3-2 for Tampa last night. Ugh.
Also, you know, to the Gardner comparison is a good one because you sometimes roll your eyes at Gardner's mistakes. Even Babcock has said, sometimes I don't know what he's doing out there. But he does so many smart and good things over the course of a game,
yep,
it more than balances out. But Polak's there for one reason. He's got no offensive game to him. He's there just to make sure that the third line isn't a tire fire.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's your only job.
Yeah.
You don't have to be off. I know I had a point, but you don't have to contribute to the offense. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Just don't help the team lose.
Yes. Like, your job is to babysit. But every time,
it's a good analogy.
Every time I come home, the stove is on fire. Like, you know, like, I'm sorry. No more popsicles for you, Polak, because you're out. You're no longer babysitting
my
kids.
He's putting the foil bag of popcorn into the microwave.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right.
Oh, yeah.
He's the bad babysitter.
He's the bad babysitter.
He's on the phone, twirling gum around his finger while he's talking to his friends. Meanwhile, the kids are all like pooping in the dryer.
Yeah. Exactly. Which, by the way, that is no amount of fabric softener is going to help you at that point. Like, you are in trouble. Honey.
Why do we even have microwaves? What the hell are microwaves for, anyway?
Ooh. It feels like the microwave peaked sometime in the 80s. Do you remember there used to be books like
microwave cookbooks.
Microwave cookery. Like, just who? Okay, let's break this down. Popcorn gets the microwave treatment.
Mm-hmm. Leftovers.
Leftovers get the microwave treatment if you are just lazy. And
they're so much better when you put them in the pan and just fry them back up.
Yeah, it's much better that way. But the microwave gets very little use.
It blanches all your vitamins out of your food.
Yep.
You're irradiating your food, which, look, I'm sure one day, kind of like cell phones, we're going to find out, oh, that was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Soaking or bathing our things in radiation.
Yeah.
Maybe not a good call. It feels like, though, if you microwave stuff for somebody now, it's kind of like, oh. Mm. It's like the TV dinner became, right? Like, TV dinners used to be what everyone did.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, you serve your family TV dinners?
Yeah.
That's where the microwave's at.
It's true. The only, like, my girlfriend, Amy, she uses it because she forgets to drink her tea.
Right.
And then she puts in the microwave to rewarm it up.
It is kind of a tea rewarmer. My wife, I had to quit coffee for sad, sad reasons.
Why?
God, I miss coffee. Well, it just doesn't. I get really agitated from it.
Okay.
And, you know, you've seen me, Matt. Do mm-hmm. I need to be more agitated?
No.
Right.
I'm about to read another Ontario wine one here.
Well, that'll bring my
Three Sisters Riesling, whether it's 13 or 15, damn good.
Did you make notes in this book that you have? Matt's flipping through a little spiral notebook here.
Yeah.
And he's got notes. Can I read some of them?
If you could read my writing.
Oh, my God, you make me sick. Okay, so Estate Chardonnay 2016 from Westcott Vineyards. Tasting notes. Yummy.
Yep.
Full body.
Yep.
Yummy.
Yep.
Yummy.
Well, just because, like, it's
Woody
not
Vineyard Gamay mm-hmm. from 13th Street Winery.
Yep.
Good fruit. And then it looks like your guess is as good as mine, and you can't even see it.
Let me see.
What the hell is that under good fruit?
Okay. For the 13th Street.
How drunk were you when you wrote that?
Oh, no, I just have to write. I have to write very quickly when I'm doing this. Oh, no, just good fruit throughout. Meaning
throughout.
Like mid palate, the front and the back end of it. This is good fruit. So,
okay, so just so that for purposes here, then, if you have a chance to buy the Westcott Vineyards Estate Chardonnay 2016, do it. And also true for the 13th Street Winery's Witty Vineyard Gamay.
Yeah, they're Gamay.
2016.
Yep.
And it's retail at $23.95, which is a very reasonable price.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
Is that red or white?
Gamay is red. Come on, okay. Bob. Don't embarrass yourself.
I know. What the hell is this? Chardonnay Unoaked 2017 from, like, what is that word?
Let me
Tasting
see.
Tasting notes. It looks like you wrote unicorn.
Let me see there. The Vinland Estates. I just made note that it's under 20 because.
Oh, that's under 20?
Under 20 because it punches above its weight. Which is a classic expression for wine.
Well, we love the punch above its weight.
That's
So is there such a thing as like a pound for pound ranking in wines? Like, you know, fighters go pound for pound.
There should be. Like, you could do it for country.
So would that be like straw weight if you're under $20 or fly weight?
Ooh, I never thought of it like that. Definitely something
workshop.
This
is like the Benson Henderson of wines.
Wow. Look at you just dropping. Like,
I like the fights.
Yeah, you do like the fights.
You
that
know
right
me,
there.
Matty, me like fights.
Yes, you do, Bob. Where were we? Something about the Leafs. Polak. And
yeah,
then,
we went through Polak. It was an inactivity, though. I thought it was a very smart, modest move. Plekanec.
Whatever we're going to call it. There wasn't.
I like Tommy P.
Yeah, Tommy
P. Can we call him Tommy Bahamas?
We can. Or just, Yeah, Tommy Bahamas works for me. By the way, if you look at photos of him now versus 15 years ago, he hasn't changed. Like he, like Pukanich, whatever. I don't know why I'm attempting it. He looks great. But it was a very safe trade deadline beyond the fact that there was a lot of first rounders got moved. Six first round picks got moved. The most since they started tracking that. But beyond that, I mean, we all wanted Carlson to get moved. And we all wanted Pacioretty to get moved.
So
neither one of them did.
Let me dive in here, because here's one of my questions for you. I always love to put you with these either-or situations.
Sure.
Who do you think is going to have a more uncomfortable end of the season? Max Pacioretty in Montreal or Erik Karlsson in Ottawa?
It feels like it's Pacioretty, because by all reports, he was packed and ready to go. You know, because he's an easier guy to move than Karlsson. Karlsson is you know, generational talent. Pacioretty is not. So I think it's Max. I think, I don't know if it's Darren Dreger. Someone's talking about this, that basically it's going to be a slow roll of awkward between now and the end of the year for the Montreal Canadiens with Pacioretty. So I think him, the only though X factor is the Melnick X factor with Ottawa. But I'm going to go with Pacioretty.
Well, they're both really not great at PR, both organizations. But Ottawa is unquestionably worse. Melnick is really starting to distinguish himself, though. He's getting into Steinbrenner-esque territory.
Oh, yeah. He is hated. And the thing is, they're not going to be good anytime soon. Like, you know, especially...
Oh, no. No, yeah. they're in win-now mode.
Yeah. And they don't have the players to win now. But no, it is Melnick. What I'm curious about with Karlsson is, this basically means he's done with Ottawa. They're just going to wait till the draft, you know, to find a better deal to trade him. Because part of it's, they're not going to pay him. They're not going to give him the money he wants. And remember Kyrie Irving, we found out one of the reasons why he forced himself out of Cleveland was he found out the team was trying to trade him in the offseason. And you know what? He didn't like that. Same thing with Karlsson in Ottawa.
You got to figure Karlsson has worked so hard to rehab from a terrible injury. He's played on some very okay teams that were basically him, good goaltending, and a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
And they had some success with that formula. He's arguably the best defenseman of the modern era, just second to Nick Lidstrom. You and I have had this discussion about Chara, but potato, potato, he's in that conversation. He's probably the most boxed in and underappreciated superstar in the entire league. And just a phenom to watch.
Yeah.
Like Max Pacioretty is a perfectly good scorer.
Perfectly good scorer.
Good hockey player, or at least he has been. But Pacioretty is not in the same universe as Karlsson.
Nope.
Pacioretty is a guy we'll remember as quite a good hockey player.
Yeah.
Karlsson is someone we're going to remember as...
Hall of Famer.
The shining light of his era.
Yeah, if he's healthy, he's a Hall of Famer. And wow, would have been exciting if he had moved. I mean, just that young, that talent, actually moving. It would have been great because it would have been different. You know, versus depth, third liner, final pairing defenseman, tinker. No. Kablooey, blow it all up right there on trade deadline day.
Ryan McDonough is a pretty big move.
It is.
Evander Kane is a fairly big move.
It's an interesting move.
He's got a 20-goal season going, and he's a talented hockey player. He's just obviously a real pain in the ass and can't seem to get along with anyone anywhere. But we'll see what that does for San Jose. So it wasn't like a... It wasn't a total slumber fest. You know what's really interesting to me, though, is why do we need TV anymore for these days? Like, I know it's fun and it's big. It's just Twitter, right?
All you
need is Twitter.
How dare you? Here's the thing. I didn't watch it this year because, again...
I was going to say, I don't know if you have a leg to stand on here, Maddie, for defending the TV broadcast while you were out with your spiral notebook.
Yeah.
Did they at least serve you apps?
Yeah. There's lots of free food. By the way, the Grange, Prince Edward Winery, their state-grown Chardonnay, so oxidative. I mean, as you know, the PEC area does a lot of oxidation when it comes to their shards, but they went just way over the top.
Hmm. I got a question for you here. So your Grange of Prince Edward Winery, the Almanac Red 2014, you wrote here, not bad, !
Yeah.
That seems counterintuitive to put an exclamation point behind not bad.
I was expecting far worse. It was better than I expected.
Oh, so you thought it would be like vinegar.
Yeah.
And it would turn out to be pretty good. So it was like, not bad. So the exclamation point was almost your own surprise.
Yes. Now, okay, hold on. Cool. I'm going to...
Bless you.
Thank you. The thing is, these places get
no
crowded.
No sneeze button when you're doing a podcast.
No, there is no cough button on this. You're in a crowded area for these wine events. So you just want to make a quick note. There's nothing worse then people stand, because, like, you know, there's a little table, someone pouring you wine, and if there's a lineup, there's nothing worse than the person who doesn't move out of the way, who's asking questions about acidity. Just get out of the way.
All right, so what had more hot air and chit-chat attached to it yesterday? Your wine event or the entirety of coverage in Canada of Trade Deadline?
Trade Deadline, because at least the wine event had stuff of substance. Trade Deadline didn't. But here's my defense. And this might be just for a small amount of people. I love watching just panicked TV when they're doing their best to just keep dancing, keep it moving. Nothing's going on. It's sports schadenfreude. I love Duffy. I have so much respect for him, but I love watching them all suffer. You get great music videos, fun music videos out of it, catch-up documentaries, llamas. I always appreciate, what does TSN do when nothing is going on?
It's probably their most creative day.
They have to be. They have no choice.
When they cover big events, they tend to be pretty serious about it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see half the stuff they do for Trade Deadline on World Juniors or something
no.
like that.
Oh, no, not at all.
The production value is really high.
Yeah.
But they would never cut funny videos like James Duthie rapping with some dude from Kingston. They just, you know, that's not what they do.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the reasons why you and I hit a ceiling there. Because we were sort of like the Laugh Patrol. I guess Jay and Dan managed to break through, but almost nobody does. With comedy on their resume.
A, comedy's hard. B, comedy in sports is even harder. And everyone takes sports incredibly seriously. And it's easy to. You get sucked into the, these guys are sacrificing their lives, so why should we be making jokes?
They probably realized, I don't know, somewhere along the road that the day's a bit of a joke in and of itself.
Yeah.
Most of the big deals happen before the day anyway. So
embrace it.
It's mock serious.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get this panel together. And we're going to talk for 10 straight hours about things that don't matter. Inherently absurd.
Inherently absurd. Ooh, actually, on that sort of tone of just sports coverage and absurd, if you ever want to be reminded about how dumb this industry, sports media industry is and how wrong we usually are, go back and read any old like Sports Illustrated magazine. I grabbed one. One of the producers is a Giants fan. Brought him the one after the Giants beat the Patriots for the second time. And the back page commentary was on how, sorry, New England, you're not at the top level of dynasties. There was a Dan Patrick interview with Tim Tebow. You know, like, these are the things that at some point were our beliefs and were important. And, man, are we wrong most of the time.
See, local news is the opposite, because local news is almost always exactly the same. Local politician scandal.
Yeah.
Something bad happened to good people. It just roll out the same day over and over again.
Yeah.
Sports, on the other hand, because you're kind of pushed to make wild proclamations.
It's always guess, 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 speculate, speculate, who's going where, which quarterback will succeed, who's the new phenom. And, you know, more than 50% of the time, you're dead wrong.
We used to talk about how on the show we didn't like predictions. This was more me than you, because I think you were more willing to, you know,
I like to dip my toe in. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a conversation starter.
Right. You're more into it than I am. But I was always like, you know, I prefer expectations as opposed to predictions.
That was your thing. Yeah. You know, coward.
I know it's a little cowardly, but at the same time, predictions are stupid. Who won at the trade deadline, Matt?
I don't know.
We'll find out in the playoffs.
Yeah. And by the way, guess who usually wins at the deadline? No one.
Right.
No one. Beyond like when the Kings got Jeff Carter and he went on a great run, helped them win the Stanley Cup and then won a couple years later. Like, here's a perfect example.
Okay, I was going to say, you know what's a deal? Okay, the Detroit Pistons picked up Rasheed Wallace in 2004, and it was instrumental to them winning the championship that year. Mm-hmm. That is the exception.
Yes.
By far, not the rule. When you pick up one player and your whole team changes.
And here's an example just to illustrate that. Kevin Shattenkirk.
Oh, Shattenkirk. Here comes the Shattenkirk music.
And he ends up in Washington. Damn, Washington's finally going to break through. They need help on defense. They got Shattenkirk. And they lose in the second round of the playoffs. And in the offseason, Shattenkirk signs with the Rangers. Wah, wah. I mean, that's most of the deals.
Yep.
So no one wins. But getting back to prediction and media and stuff. Yeah, we're sort of in a position to make predictions. And usually they're wrong. Dead, dead wrong.
That said, though. Who'd you like yesterday? Who do you think walked off the best? It's hard not to, right?
It is Tampa, because they have McDonough this year and they have him next year. It's not like with Shattenkirk that left right away. So you get an extra year, and it's an immediate need for the team. And also, it means that just a little bit less will be expected of Hedman and Strawman and Girardi, because now you've got McDonough. And not saying he's the end-all, be-all, but he makes everyone's jobs a little bit easier.
He's an upgrade in your top four. He's going to see an awful lot of ice time.
Yeah.
And it was the area in which they were clearly the weakest, and they're really, really strong in a whole bunch of areas. So yes. How do you not look at that and say, okay, well, they got better? I think we're kind of sleeping on Pittsburgh, airing Derek Brassard. That strength down the middle, and you saw how in that first run with Kessel, when they had a really good third line that was fast and quick and could contribute to scoring, they rode that all the way to the final.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's the formula again, where you've got a really good third line center now playing with a dynamic winger, and they're just going to be hard to match up with because they're coming at you from all angles.
Here's
now.
My prediction, Bob.
Hmm.
Penguins win the East.
Yeah, maybe.
I
kind of feel that way too, Matty.
There's about six teams in the East that have a better record than the Penguins. I don't give a bleep about that.
Nashville made it to the finals and they were the eighth seed.
Well, yeah, and more than that, Pittsburgh. They looked at October, November, and December, and they said, okay, guys, you don't need to try that hard. The Blackhawks, you know, Blackhawks who are having a horrible season, they had 10 goals, all even strength. When does that happen against Pittsburgh in the first week? Three times in the first month, Pittsburgh lost 10-1, 7-1, 7-1. They didn't care. Since January, very few teams are better than them. So, yeah, I got the Penguins. That's my prediction. The Penguins are going for a three-peat.
They're my Dr. Dre team in the sense that everybody forgot about them.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
they're back and bigger than ever.
Yeah, everyone's wearing the headphones, and Dr. Dre is a billionaire. Yeah.
He did a pretty good job. You ever see the documentary that I have on Netflix called, what is it?
Not Too Big to
Fit. Not the Wild Ones. What's it called?
Wild Bunch?
No.
The Wild Bunch?
But it's about the story of him and Jimmy Iovine.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen all of it. I have it all recorded. I've watched some of it. It's great.
I watched about an episode and a half.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Those guys are impressive.
Yes.
To anybody who works in business, you don't even need to be an entertainment fan. Just watch it because, like, that is hardcore personalities. The apex predators of the business world.
You know who's the apex predator of the lawyer world, Bob?
Who?
Jeff Pollock is. You want to talk about impressive? He is our lawyer and is one of our sponsors. We're proud to have him part of it. Very simple. If you need help with litigation, states, trusts, corporate, commercial, real estate law, this is the guy for you. First off, his phone number, it's like ordering a pizza. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. You can contact him, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. Super nice guy. And the best thing is you will not feel like you are just a nameless, faceless customer because it's a small family-run company. And his wife is joining on board to do more works on the accounting side of things because she's like a math wizard. So it's a small family law firm. And so all the personal touches, fantastic, really good guy.
Loving Jeff. I still got to get him my will information.
Yeah.
But there's a stack of papers and my wife and I are just looking at it. And, you know, we've been working on this film, Strombo and I. So the last 10 days have been pretty busy. I don't think I've gone to bed before 2 a.m. in about 2 weeks.
So then I'm not going to make fun of how long it'll be before you finally get a hold of Jeff with all your legal
stuff. Yeah, just give me a couple weeks to sort this out.
Couple weeks.
You know how we always see directors and everybody on film sets and they're always wearing baseball hats?
Yeah.
I now understand why that is.
Yeah.
It's because you don't have time to shower. Like, Matt, and I say this only because my decrepitude is, just like your snobbery.
Yep.
My decrepitude is kind of a shared joke we have.
Yes.
I honestly today couldn't remember the last time I washed my hair. But I think it might have been last Sunday.
Okay.
I washed it then.
The Sunday that just happened?
No, the one before that.
Ooh, the one before that. Okay.
See, now, I must have. I must have since then because I think I would probably be absolutely unfit for public consumption if that were the case. But I can't remember washing my hair.
Yeah.
And it's kind of curly-ish,
mm-hmm.
but not now.
Yep.
Now it's just standing straight. It looks like I put my finger in the electric socket.
Do you want to give any update on the film? Yeah, on the film.
Almost there. Thursday, we upload our trailer and put in all of our papers for our grant and fund application. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
It's a caper.
Mm-hmm.
It's Guy Ritchie-esque.
Yep.
With a little bit of Edgar Wright thrown in for for comedy.
Well, and you got to give it. It's George. George is a Canadian staple.
He acts in it. He directed everything.
Yeah.
He's done a really great job. It was an original story concept by George, which mm-hmm. he and I then took and developed together.
Yep.
He's been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's tireless. Like, it's actually kind of hard to work with George because he's got no off switch.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He also has no kids and no family. Like,
yeah.
he only does this. So he'll be like, yeah, let's just keep going. And I'm thinking to myself, I got to get Charlotte's lunches made.
Oh, well, see, no, but it's beyond that. If we could talk about George for a minute here. He does not drink. He does not have children. He's one of these guys that doesn't require a lot of sleep. Like, George is the person that does more by 10 a.m. than most people do all day. And it's got to be tough because, like, especially for you, because you have children. So that is going to, like, just take away a, you know, a good chunk of time. And then there's George, who's like this whirling dervish of productivity. I mean, I don't have kids, but, you know, sometimes I get sleepy because I had wine.
Right. Well, you know, that's like having a kid.
Yeah, it is.
Your wine hobby is kind of like having children. Mm-hmm. Many, many, many delicious children.
Many, many. And also a variety of different colors because I don't see color. Sometimes I see white, rosé. Ooh, by the way, I tried a Southbrook orange wine. If you like steep, it's like steep tea and just a variety of spices. Very, very interesting. So try the orange wine.
The Kloss and Chase Vineyards, the Brock Chardonnay 2016, you described as lovely.
Yeah.
And then circled $23.75 its retail price and put an exclamation point by it.
Yeah.
So that's a keeper for you?
Yeah, it is. Even though it's funny because the grapes aren't sourced from Prince Edward County. They're sourced from Niagara. It's just something about how they make their wines that it still has a bit of that PEC character.
So I see that there's something called Stratus wines.
Yep.
Now, that's not Trish Stratus, the old wrestler.
Not, no, it is not Trish Stratus.
Okay, just checking.
Higher end wines. Be. Higher end, more expensive wines. Some good Bordeaux blends.
I'm going to flip through some of these. I liked your little book here, though, Matt.
Yeah.
It's not really super good writing.
No, it's horrible writing. But
so what? You understand it.
Yeah, yeah. I fully understand it.
I got to actually buy. There's a guy who helped us out. He owns a film company, and he helped us out with all kinds of edit suites and technical advice and really just great filmmaking advice in general. We got to buy him a bottle of wine for like $100.
I think
it's $100 the right amount when you want to buy someone an expensive bottle of wine?
Absolutely, 100%. Okay. The average price that a Canadian spends on a bottle of wine is under $13. So $100, 100%. Yeah.
Like that's a super classy level, right?
Yeah.
At some point, we're going to have to task your expertise and help us pick a $100 bottle of wine. Pick the one that you would most want to drink that we can actually, you know, we can get without having to.
Yeah, you can get at the LCBO.
Yeah, like we don't have to pay like duty charges and stuff.
Yep.
Don't think about it now.
No.
You got time.
No.
I know you looked at that as an opportunity to talk about delicious.
No. I've done enough.
Matt squared himself up on his chair and he's like, well, let me see here. Rabbit, what will we get?
Debating between Bordeaux and Burgundy. The classic debate.
He's actually tapping his fingers. He looks like Homer Simpson when Homer Simpson puts on his counting hat.
Yeah.
And he's trying to do math.
Or when he's in the middle of a hoedown, he's like, he's thinking.
Or Homer Simpson at the chili contest.
Really, there's about 100 different versions.
Yeah, okay, let's face it.
Homer, the land of chocolate. We could go on and on. Just a little statement. Thursday. Just, you know, neither one of us is going to be in the city of Toronto on Thursday. I wanted to let the listeners know. And you said you were going to shame me for why I'm not going to be here.
All right. So let's just describe why we're not going to be here on Thursday. We're both going to be out of town.
Okay.
I'm going to be in Ottawa helping the One Campaign put on a bunch of seminars for young kids who want to get involved in public life and work with the governmental system and specifically things like foreign aid, foreign trade. And how it pertains to issues of gender, how it pertains to issues of poverty. So I'm going to be in Ottawa Thursday and Friday, leaving first thing Thursday and then coming home Friday afternoon. How about you, Matt? What are you doing on Thursday?
I'm doing the exact same thing as you. Feel like I've been painted into a corner here, Bob. So again, you're helping children get into politics.
Yeah, international development specifically.
International development, helping especially with women, you know, just breaking those barriers, doing all those important things. I'm going up to a private ski resort called Beaver Valley because every year they do a men's night. They do this men's night thing, and so it's going to be me and my buddies an excuse to get drunk on Thursday night and go ski on Friday. That's where I'm going to be, Bob. On Thursday and Friday.
We should send each other texts. Let's send each other texts Thursday night. And I'm going to be standing next to some guy from the UN.
Yeah.
You're going to be standing next to one of your drunk buddies with rib sauce on your face.
Yeah. Oh, I hope there's ribs.
Me too. Usually, ribs are delicious. Hey, it's not to say I'm not going to have ribs.
Yeah.
I'm out of town. And you know, like, look, I don't drink.
Yep.
I don't do drugs.
Nope.
I don't philander.
Nope.
I don't gamble.
Yep.
So if I don't eat at least three entrees,
yeah,
what the hell am I doing with
exactly
my time?
Like, you just might as well get into the grave right now. All right.
Just crawl in and pull the blanket over myself.
I'll tweet out some pics or something. You can.
Okay, let's mutually tweet out pics. We'll do it on our Instagram feed.
Yeah, that you haven't set up yet. But I like the idea of you're there with a young woman, a young girl who wants to one day make a difference, and I'm going to be there, you know, with a Coors Light and some ribs, and you know, just partying with people.
Look, Matt, it's on brand.
It's on brand.
Hey, you do a ton. You work with Amy and her Hope for Help.
Yes,
campaign.
Hope for Help charity.
You do a ton of charity work, Matt. Yeah. You do probably more than I do, practically. I mean, yeah. I write checks and I help out. No, I'm trying to change that. I actually think what you do as a family is inspirational. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I follow your lead.
I'm not going to lie to you. I want to give a shout out to Hope for Help and Amy Hawk and her sister, Christy. They've been doing this school, helping build this school in Mombasa, Kenya for 10 years. But the great thing is it gives me a morality shield. Like when I'm at the LCBO, again on brand, and the cashier says, would you like to donate, you know, and I'm like, I'm, you know, there's $180 worth of wine. Would you like to donate $1, $3, $5, or $10 to help children read? I'm like, no, I'm good. And I can do that without any guilt because I know in the back of my mind, I help out with this charity. When I'm walking on the street and you know, the weather gets nice and you see the people on both sides of the street, so you can't avoid them, and they're there for some sort of charity, you know, help with animals or whatever.
Because I'm a girl.
Because I'm
or
a girl.
WWF.
Yeah, any of those ones. And I will immediately go, oh, yeah, no. And then I'll go into the spiel about Hope for Help, and it's great because it's morality shield. It allows me to go buy them without feeling guilty. It's fantastic.
Let's say I run into Doctors Without Borders or Sick Kids, because those are we have certain family causes that we support.
Yeah.
Those are among them. And so I'll run into someone who's looking for donations on the street, and I'll say, oh, we already donate to you guys. And they're in a really awkward spot because they have to say thank you, but they're also pissed off that they're not going to get credit for you bringing in that money.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great. It's a great cause. And you can't really say, would you like to give more here now to me?
Yeah, I know. It's tough. If we're going to go down this rabbit hole, let's continue for a second. I lied. And this was right to someone's face. They were part of some sort of like animal charity sanctuary thing in Northern Ontario. And I forget the name of it. And I went, oh, yeah. And they're like, oh, do you know about us? I'm like, yep, I sure do. And then they go, oh, well, and the guy try to call me on it. So what is it that we do? And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, now what? So I'm like, well, you know, you help with the conservation. You know, make sure that, you know, it's the right amount of animals in the ecosystem so that, you know, and I forget what answer I gave. It felt satisfactory to me. I have no idea.
It's like when you were a kid and you didn't read the book and you had to do a book report. So you just kind of rework the stuff that's written on the back of the book. This was an exciting book that kept me turning pages over and over again. It was an adventure with these characters, and I loved it.
Well, many people believe
as much as Publishers Weekly did.
Well, many people believe it's just about candy bars. The Three Musketeers is about adventure, teamwork, and most importantly, always be yourself. In summation, I like Three Musketeers.
The team held together, kind of like the way that nougat does with chocolate.
Exactly.
Man, how long has our rabbit hole been? I feel like we stopped talking about sports about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's been a little while here.
Let's just do some quick hits here.
Yeah.
When the Cavs lose, like to the Spurs or something, how good do you allow yourself to feel good about it, or do you just not believe the hype?
Yeah, no. Oh, no, I do, because the thing, anything LeBron is around, the hype machine, it does not allow for nuance or gray. It allows for 0 or 10, black or white. They win their first two games. The Cavs are back. LeBron's engaged. Look out east. They lose to San Antonio by a massive margin without Kawhi Leonard in a game where LeBron James statistically had a great game. And you're like, oh, same old thing, just with younger players. It's still Boston and Toronto. And you know what I do, Bob? I swing with it, baby. I'm a swinger. After that game, like, yeah, LeBron, you ain't going nowhere. Toronto's going to beat you.
I'm the exact opposite, where I just believe that whatever you say, they're Michael Myers of the NBA. You mm-hmm. think they're dead. They always get back up.
Yeah.
You know, they got a coat hanger in their eye. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
They'll be back. You know, Loomis shoots them. They fall out of the balcony. They land on the ground. They cut away from him, and you're like, well, I know it's going to happen when they cut back. Oh, there it is. The ground is empty. He's
and every Raptor away. Fan is like a 19-year-old Jamie Lee Curtis quietly crying as you get the shots of all the different locales from Halloween.
So the other side of it is whenever the Raptors lose, like they just lost recently to Minnesota, It was a close game. Could have gone either way.
Mm-hmm. But oh, no. Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. Sorry. Milwaukee. My apologies. Yeah. You know, but it wasn't death by freak. You know, it was a... They didn't lose in a way that would make you upset. But did I take they? Every... I take everything as a sign that trouble is coming. And I know that's just my paranoid nature.
It's so unfair. Think about this. Now, this is one of those quirky stats that means nothing but it's fun to say. The Raptors are set to break an NBA record for the highest scoring differential for a month. Every game for February, every game they're winning by 20. It is incredible. They are every opponent, they're blowing out. And yet, where does our focus go? The final 3 to 4 minutes of the game against Utah a couple weeks ago at home, and then Friday night against Milwaukee, because of one thing, we're viewing it through the prism of past playoff failures, and you see the close games with the ISO ball, and everything looks disorganized, and it's PTSD if you're a Raptors fan, and on some level, it's totally not fair, because they're blowing out everybody.
You know who they are. Mm. Every sport has them. They're the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what roster they put together. Doesn't matter where they wind up in the regular season. President's Trophy, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because you just expect they're going to fall apart. The Cleveland Indians, and before this, the Texas Rangers. What's their roster look like? What's their staff ERA? I don't care. They're going to find a way to lose to somebody, right?
Yep.
Is there a football equivalent, actually?
Of the team?
Not really, right? Maybe Green Bay?
No, but Green Bay always with Aaron Rodgers scares you. I mean, you know what?
Who's the team that you think is going to be good, but you ultimately never really care about in the NFL? Minnesota?
Minnesota? Washington. Like Kirk Cousins, when they went 9-7 and made the playoffs, you knew they weren't going to win because they didn't beat anyone with a winning record. So come the playoffs, they lose.
So that's where I'm at with the Raptors. And it's the same as everybody else. It's just... Now, every time, it's like, you know, when you drink Greek coffee, apparently you can read the grounds and it tells the future. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I just learned that recently. But it's like at the end of every game, it's like the cup of Greek coffee is finished. And I look at the grounds and say, what does the future hold? And I only read negative because I think that I'm too close to it, Matt. I'm too close to it.
Yeah.
I think I just have to pick it back up in the playoffs. I don't think I can watch the rest of the regular season.
But the thing is, but I get it. But here's what you need to do. Okay. Have you ever been in a relationship where you knew, she's too good for me, she's going to leave me at some point?
I'm in one right now.
There you are. Unfortunately, you got a kid, so she's kind of stuck with you. the Lyle Lovett, you know, when he was married to Julia Roberts. He must have woken up every morning and go, damn.
Christie Brinkley, Billy Joel.
Billy Joel. I'm like, I'm going to enjoy the bleep out of this because I know eventually she's going to be gone. Treat that with the Raptors. Like, they beat up Detroit by close to 30. Blake Griffin, they control him. Ibaka and Pascal Siakam do a great job. And we're like, whatever. Here's the thing. At some point, the Raptors are going to be bad because cyclical nature, every team at some point gets bad. So enjoy these blowout wins. Enjoy seeing, you know, Bebe hitting a three because eventually it's going to go away.
Don't be sad it's over. Be glad that it happened.
Yeah, exactly. So enjoy these moments. They're going to be gone. So,
speaking of being gone, sorry to interrupt you there, Maddie, but how much time do we have left?
We have about 10 more minutes left.
All right. So can we talk a bit about the Jays? Because it's spring training, and I actually watched an inning of baseball.
Did you really?
I did, yeah. Well, actually, no. It was like one batter. I watched Kendrys Morales work his way from a 3-1 count to a strikeout.
Okay, so you're not exactly Dan Shulman right now.
Well, it was Saturday, and I was busy,
yeah.
And it was on, and they were already losing to Detroit, and I didn't care about the result.
I bet George watched the entire game, scored it, as he was working on some other project.
Yeah, that's right. He's got the clipboard out. Yeah. Ooh, backwards K. Yeah.
Scoring games. That's going to be the most confusing thing to explain to kids.
Scoring games is the coolest. Nobody does that anymore. It's
That's the reason why.
Best way to learn. You used to score games, didn't you?
No, I never
scored. Your dad did. Your dad was actually the official scorer of the Blue Jays for a while.
I'd sit there and see him with the long legal pad, you know, scoring a game. You know, I just wanted another ice cream sandwich.
Okay, so on the way over here today, I heard a radio report that there's inflammation in Marcus Stroman's throwing shoulder.
Yep.
And that he's missing a start.
Yep.
And nobody says we should be worried or not worried yet. It's a little early for that. But it's inflammation in his throwing shoulder.
Yeah.
So I was kind of hopeful that the Jays would have a pretty good season.
Mm-hmm.
I also expected them to do more than just tinker with utility infielders and outfielders.
With a bunch of guys whose names I still can't pronounce.
And so they got a million questions going in. Most of them pertain to age and aging stars.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of young kids who are exciting and they're coming up. So we're clearly in that phase between dynasties, right? Between eras. is this going to be a terrible year, though?
Yeah.
Like something in my gut, I didn't think it was going to be a terrible year, but even just hearing that Strowman thing, you know what it reminded me of? Remember that year where, you know, Michael Saunders got hurt and then Marcus Strowman got hurt?
Yeah.
Strowman was bunting, Saunders stepped on a sprinkler.
Yeah.
And you could just see, look, the gods hate us this year, and let's just get through it.
What this year is when the farmer overlooks in the field and he turns to the city slickers who don't know better and he goes, storm's coming. Like that's, you know, whether it's...
Is it Bill Paxton and Twister tasting
the ground? Tasting the dirt and then throwing grass in the air and realizes that, oh yeah, there's three hurricanes coming in or tornadoes coming in for Wyoming.
27, 33, and 38 minutes away.
And the best part is that his ragtag bunch gets into their ragtag trucks and then the evil corporate guys waits 2 minutes and then they follow Bill Paxton.
You know what I love about that too? How much better a scientist is Bill Paxton than everyone else? Like, they got PhDs.
Yeah.
They went to school.
They've got computers and science.
Why do they have their heads up their asses? But Bill Paxton can figure it out.
By the way, the sad thing is this exact conversation, we've had this on an earlier podcast. There's no way we have not had the Twister conversation.
You and I have this conversation about once every 3 or 4 months.
3 or 4 months, it absolutely comes up. But it's Tulowitzki. When's he coming back? We don't know. Strowman, not happy. JD Martinez, Boston, Stanton, New York, and now Strowman. It's all these little things, and it feels like we're coming into a storm of irrelevance. You know how there's like in the NHL guys sign bridge contracts? This is the bridge year to the rebuild. And the bridge year feels a little irrelevant.
I hate the arbitration process, going back to Strowman's unhappy.
Yeah.
Because you have to make a case for the purpose of saving money against a player that you actually like.
Yeah.
But the whole point is to say he's not worth as much as he thinks he is.
Yeah.
How do you not have bad feelings about that?
And especially if you're as thin-skinned as Marcus Strowman. Like, there are some guys, they can handle it. And by the way, I get it if a player can't. You know, that's got to be tough to hear.
Can you imagine if your contract negotiation went that way?
I've never actually had a contract negotiation.
Really?
It's more like producer Eric Karolnik says, can you work next week? I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll be there.
Fair enough.
But, oh, yeah, like the arbitration process, it's the most awkward thing in sports. And I've said it over and over. It needs to be televised. But I feel then they would probably pull some punches. But, yeah, it's a landmine for an emotional disaster.
So I just felt on the way over here today, for the first time, just hearing that little bit of news about Marcus Strowman, that my suspicion of doom is starting to come true.
Yeah.
And I did not enter the season that way. I was going to be optimistic.
Yeah.
At least take it as a learning process for them as they try to figure out, okay, who stays, who goes. You know, Devin Travis looks okay.
For now?
Yeah, but no
he's
one
He's never stayed healthy.
Yeah, nobody feels really good about that.
No.
Just in the moment.
No. The biggest news we've heard is that Donaldson will be testing free agency. Hooray! Okay. Anyway, I'm not going to sing the Blue Jays song.
Any other sports to get to before we call it a day?
We got about 4 minutes left, and I was going to ask you this question, but I feel like you're not properly equipped for it this year.
Or properly showered.
Who are you rooting for in the Oscars?
Oh, geez. I haven't seen a lot of the films. So
that's why.
So I'm going to go on past record. Mm-hmm. Big Guillermo del Toro fan. Yep. And The Shape of Water looks really interesting.
It is very interesting.
I love his movies.
Yep.
Even the schlocky ones like Pacific Rim.
Yep.
You know, Hellboy, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just love Guillermo del Toro. Plus, I like any director who carries a paunch.
Yeah.
You know, he's a bigger guy like me. So, mm-hmm. You know, I could be Roberto del Toro.
Yeah.
I'm going with Shape of Water for no reason other than GDT is pretty cool.
It's got a decent chance because it's been nominated for a lot. I'm rooting for three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah, I heard it was great.
It's great. I'm rooting for that. I'm rooting for Lady Bird. You know, those are sort of the two that I'm rooting the most for. I hope Get Out wins something. I think what Peele did is incredible considering this was the first movie I ever directed and stuff. And the reason also I love it is I can't do it from, because, you know, I'm a white guy, so there are certain things that I can't fully appreciate. But what I love is he loves horror movies. Like, to me, this was a love letter to all the horror movies that he grew up that influenced him.
He talked a lot about how Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby was a big influence. And if you know that movie and you've seen Get Out, you can identify the influence for sure. I read the screenplay, and because I'm writing a horror movie myself right now.
Yeah.
And it's beautifully written. So here's my prediction that he will win the best original screenplay, because that's a way you give him a nod as a serious new creator, but you don't have to put him into the director category like for a genre pick.
When Tarantino did for Pulp Fiction.
100%. And, yeah. and Sofia Coppola won best screenplay. I can't remember if it was adapted or original.
For Lost in Translation.
Right. So those that young talent, they like to prime them a little bit in the screenplay category rather than the directing one. So you mark my words. And it's a great screenplay.
It is.
So he will win the Oscar for that.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I could
Is
I
it
could
this
see that.
Sunday?
It is this Sunday. Yeah.
God, I'm so far behind.
Yeah. And if like I don't know, I might take Monday off work. I haven't decided yet.
Are you gonna have a party?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's basically whoever wants to come over can watch the Oscars. But it's just like that's a late night and then have to do the 4:30 wake up. That's a tough one.
One of my partners won an Oscar.
Really?
Yeah, one of the partners in the company that George and I have won an Oscar. He was a producer on Spotlight.
Oh.
He actually stood up there and called out the priest in front of the entire, the Pope in front of the whole world. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, Michael Sugar, he's an intense and, well, he's actually a lovely guy. He's not that intense. His intelligence is intense. Super duper smart. So smart that it makes me and George kind of feel like Tweedledum and Tweedledumber.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's the highest compliment is when you get angry because you're like, I can't do what you're doing, and I'm angry at you. I should be celebrating you, but I'm also angry.
When you see our trailer, the last comment will make more sense.
Okay. When can we see the trailer?
Thursday. It's getting uploaded on Thursday. All right. I'll send it around. In lieu of doing the pod, I'm going to send around the trailer.
So we'll be back on Monday. Also, a quick shout out before I forget to Seat Giant. And listen, these guys help us out. SeatGiant.ca. And if you use the discount code Bob and Matt at checkout, you get to save money. You just click the add button, then the review order button, and your discount code will show up before confirming your order. And we get a little cut of it. You save money. Concert tickets, sporting events, anything. And the best is it's all done in Canadian dollars. Every ticket's guaranteed. It's all legitimate. Like I was trying to book a flight today for Florida. I thought my flight was going to be like $480. And it was in American dollars. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, no, it's $700. I was so angry. So this Seat Giant, the exact opposite, seatgiant.ca. So Bob, as we go out, I just want to say good luck on Thursday and congratulations on the charity work you are doing in Ottawa. Now congratulate me for getting drunk with my friends at a private ski resort.
Matt, I want to give you all the best as you leave here to go to Beaver Valley to enjoy a whole bunch of takeout and do some drinking and maybe a little skiing, but probably not even. Pants. And enjoy one of the finer things in life, which is the company of good friends.
Yes.
Because if friends and community aren't at the heart of what we do, then what's life all about? Matt, your tribute to life itself inspires me.
Yes. Thank you, Bob.
You are the fabric that holds us all together.
See you on Monday, Bob.
Bye, Maddie.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.